What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
2 days call for cookouts and lots of laundry. This Memorial Day at Lowe's, save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Gas Grill. Now just $199. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep dishes, clothes, and food fresh. Having fun in the sun is easy with us in your corner. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last, selection varies by location. See associate or Lowe's.com for details.
Welcome to part two of our conversation about being in touch with the dead with Ryan Wethelmeyer. I want to talk more about, you know, kind of how you got yourself down that road and kind of that discovery that you went to. But I want to just touch on one thing that you had mentioned there about the idea of, you know, you're sitting there going, you know, I really would like to reconnect with this person or that person. And it's been many, many years. And then, you know, suddenly you get a message, you know, social media, whatever it may be. What is that? What is that? Especially when it's not like initiated. It's not like you went and suddenly just liked something on their page and then they thought, oh, yeah, I haven't talked to that person in a while, too. I mean, you can connect those dots and go, OK, well, it was, you know, this was kind of manually sparked. You know, someone turned the key here for a moment and it just kind of did it. But when there's no communication, just boom, you're thinking about it. You're thinking, maybe I should talk to that person again. And then suddenly they're there. Well, either, you know, messaging you or what have you. There's communication that begins suddenly from the other side. Are we beacons? Are we reaching out? Are we broadcasting something mentally that somehow gets delivered to that other person? Not necessarily directly. Boy, this person's wishing I would contact them. I'm going to contact them. But on their own side, they're feeling the same thing too. I mean, what is that?
I like to think of it like kind of like a path of electricity. So if you're thinking in your head, oh, I haven't heard from that person in a while, you might be initiating that source point to make like an electrical connection to that person. That we're all interconnected. I believe that it's just like the stars in the universe, just like any kind of energy form, we're mentally connected. And my argument for that is look at other species. Look at like geese, how they fly, the particular patterns they fly, how they can switch off. I mean, granted, we don't know anything about their verbal communication, but I feel like that they are more in tune with each other as a group and stuff like that. They can do that without verbally communicating. So what's stopping a human from being the same way? So that when you spark that, it just might be just this little nudge on that person that's just, they pop, you know, you pop into their head, or maybe they pass a particular car on their way home or something that you used to have, and it makes them think about the time you guys drove somewhere in school or like whatever. So there might be something that comes into their reality that might spark a reminder. And so it could be another thing is, which is kind of twisting on the mind here, is that if you think, I haven't heard from that person in a while, maybe you're the recipient and they've already thought the same thing and thought about reaching out. And then when you think of it, that kind of amplifies it. And they are like, they get that intuition of maybe I should reach out.
Mm-hmm. That seems to make some sense. How were you able to, can you said it was really difficult to kind of go down this road and to start to understand this, because your mind almost battles you as you try to connect, you know, the mental world to the spiritual soul world, if you will, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. What brought you down that road? What sort of path did you take? How did you get there?
It was kind of like I knew about that kind of stuff to a very small degree, and I kind of was putting it off and stuff. And I feel like that the reason that I was led to where I am now to discover, I don't like to call myself like a medium or anything like that. I mean, I would say intuitive. What led me to that was I was kind of putting it off, so to speak, and focusing within my 3D, like a lot of people do within the physical world. And it was almost like the universe just kind of was like, all right, we're tired of waiting for this. So they kind of just pushed me down the slide, so to speak, like a kid at the top of a slide scared to go down. They kind of just gave me that nudge. And it was like people that I knew in my reality were just in and out of my reality. Everything kind of shifted. I started getting really, really kind of depressed and miserable in my 3D and kind of feeling stuck and looking for outlets to that. So I started really getting into different books and just looking things through these books about spiritualism. Then there's visual creation and stuff like that, and that physical manifestation of that we can bring stuff. But your mind fights that because, like, we hear it all the time, if you can dream it, you can do it, those kind of inspirational sayings. But when it comes time to actually put it into practice, your brain battles it because it seems fantasy. It doesn't seem like a real thing. So I started really taking it one step at a time and kind of doing it. And I went a step further. I really wanted to know how this connects. So I started reading more into astrophysics. I started reading into string theories, a lot of Brian Greene's work, if anybody's familiar with that. And then I started looking into neuroscience, how the brain can change, how it rewires itself all the time to fit new patterns and habits and everything, and just trying to understand where all these dots connect. And it can become quite overwhelming doing this all at once. And then finally, I just said to myself, I'm like, all right, let's do something small. Let's see if this is kind of real. A lot of people refer to Abraham Hicks' work as well when they go through this about manifesting your own reality. I was like, at this point, it was kind of coming around December timeframe. I was like, for the holidays, I really could use a little extra cash. Who couldn't around the holidays? And I just set that intention, didn't care where it came from, didn't care how I got it, and just let it go. And then I think it was a week later, I had just transitioned jobs a couple months beforehand on that, and they had sent me a check for several hundred dollars out of basically an investment account I didn't even know I had with that company. Mm-hmm. So that was just the first kick of, well, maybe this can be a realistic thing for, you know, anybody. And I feel like that, looking back, as we talked earlier about older civilizations, I feel like they were very much in tune with that kind of thing. But today, with us having so much within our 3D space and so much distraction going on, basically just to numb the mind, we don't go down that avenue. And I feel like that is hindering so much on a lot of people today.
I would agree. I would very much agree that I think it hinders a lot of people today. Let me ask you this. Earlier in the conversation, you said that the more one seeks spirits, the more they seem to seek us. And I've seen evidence of it both ways, and I'm sure you probably have too. So what leads you to believe that that is the case? And more so, what are the steps that one must be taking for that to be the reality of our communication with the other side?
A lot of people, I might be wrong on this, but from my perspective, it seems like a lot of people will go out to a location just to do the standard, like, what's your name? You know, just the typical, just to get something from a spirit box or EVP session. There are groups out there, sadly, that do follow closely to the shows out there that lean more towards the darker side of things. And so they approach things kind of negatively. But I feel like you kind of have to open up to wanting to learn, I would say, about what they were like, what their life was like. And I feel like the more that you go about it with, I'm trying to put together their story here, or, you know, put together the events that are happening in this location, versus just a single night somewhere to just get a response, that really opens it up. I mean, imagine if you had very limited energy and you were seeking to talk to somebody, and you just saw wave after wave of people coming and asking the same stuff, and then you have somebody come in that's looking for a different story or actually wants to hear your story. That would be the person you would go, I have this small percentage of energy to expel. This is the person I want to talk to, versus the same thing reiterated over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. And when you're... go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you continue on.
I'd say I really found that last year I launched a series, The Hinsdale Archives, and I really found that during that filming, this kind of to be the case, that it was seeking me. Scarily, it was only seeking me because it turned into, I was there at one point, not long after actually, that it was, the Hinsdale House was aired on TV for the first time during paranormal lockdown, but the first time I was there after leaving that, I just had this feeling that, like, I'm not done with this place. And then it turned into an event here that I was invited to, or somebody there that knew me and asked me if I wanted to come up. So I just, all these things kept popping up as opportunities to go back to that house. And it got to a point where it's like, okay, I have to connect the dots here. And then during a live feed at another location, there was a very strikingly similar disembodied voice captured that I caught within that house as well. And that's when I started getting the mindset of, maybe it's connected to other things. Maybe, you know, the haunting can transition from one location to another. And certainly with today's technology, I mean, you've got cell towers every mile apart with boosting 5G signal nowadays. I mean, why is that not an energy highway for them to transport, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly seems viable. And then it got to a point that I had so much. What makes the documentary unique is that the very beginning of it was, I just had so much on hard drives that I was like, I need to just get this presented. I need to just go through it, cut out the little stuff that constantly happens, go for the bigger picture, and just produce something out of it. And then the last two episodes of it, we were there after that process, filming with intention to try to figure out what was actually happening there. And it's gotten so much larger since that there's going to definitely, I have to make a season two out of it. But it's kind of like when I was doing this, it started to single me out and get me back to that place. Mm-hmm. And I think that in a way it's, even though there can be darker energies in that house, because it's kind of a mixed bag of everything you could imagine as far as experiences go in that place. But I feel like that it's trying to get its story told. And since I already have, you know, a whole backlog of information on that place, that it's using me to try to get that story out.
And there's a lot that we could talk about on that location. We've done episodes in the past with investigators and such who've been there. But with the little time we have remaining, tell me, and maybe we could do another episode where you can share your experiences with the Hinsdale House. But give us a little bit of information. What drew you into the Hinsdale House initially?
I'm not really sure exactly. So the investigator I was with in Goldfield, we ended up going our separate ways probably within 6 months of teaming up and doing that. And then he had booked the Hinsdale House, and so he was doing all of our booking, and my partner had canceled those reservations and stuff. We split, went separate ways. And out of the several locations we had that we were looking forward to, I was most devastated about Hinsdale. I really wanted to go there. I don't know if it was just having seen it with Paranormal Lockdown that I figured it would be kind of a, almost like a guarantee that something was going to happen, and I was amped up for that.
Sure.
Or if it was just trying to call me in. Looking back, maybe it was trying to call me in, because when I was filming there in the series alone, I was supposed to have a team with me, and every single person, even my backup people, either something came up or they became ill, and I had to go by myself is how that ended up happening. So I kind of think it was singling me out a little bit. Yeah. And then what really kicked it into high gear for me was the first time we were there. There's the second story, which you probably know has no electricity, except for Dan does have a router up there, but that wire runs through the wall. But that's gutted, the staircase, no lights, no light switches, no power, nothing. And we were told from the first time I was there that if you're not getting anything and you want to spark action going on in that house, kind of ignore it. So that's kind of why a lot of that documentary, I'm not in the house or I'm just letting cameras roll. The most important stuff tends to happen when you're not paying attention. Mm-hmm. And so the first time we were there, we were myself and my, I had a friend that was with me. We were talking amongst ourselves and we both witnessed out of the corner of our eyes, like a flash of light that I would almost describe as like, if you flip on a light switch and you have a light bulb blow, it does that flash, or like a single use old school photography flash.
Yeah.
And I had no equipment that would emit that. And I had nothing in the house that would emit that. And it came from the staircase, which from the first floor of that staircase up the staircase and all of the second floor, there are no light sources. So, and we're far enough back from a road that it's not going to be, you know, a car passing by or anything. And also it came from within that staircase where there are no windows. So that was the most compelling thing that really kicked it in high gear for me, that, okay, there is something stronger here than I've ever experienced that can, that is capable of getting our attention to this degree. And it just so happens that I guess it was kind of teasing me at that point that it wanted me to come back for more, because the only camera in the house that would have caught it was no longer functioning.
And when you realized that, I mean, did you know right away that that was the camera that was not functioning, or did you go and go, oh, it, I, let's see what's on this camera. Wait a second. It's the one that's not working.
Right. Right away. We were kind of, after we kind of got over the adrenaline rush of it, I checked the camera. I had my computer with me and I wanted to pull that memory card and just review it and see what it really looked like head on. And when I pulled the camera, when I hit the stop button, the display on the back should light up, and it wasn't. And it was almost like it was stuck in a standby mode and it wouldn't let me do anything. So I had to hard pull the battery out of it to restart it. And when I looked at the memory, it truncates the files into 10-minute segments. And that last 10-minute segment that would have caught that was not there. And that's not the first time I've had stuff like that happen. A lot of evidence that I've caught throughout the years in that place, especially when producing that documentary, I would put the memory card in and download it to external hard drives to work with. And I have so many files that are either corrupt or for some reason they can't load, or they're missing something in the codecs that is just not cooperating, or working with Premiere, it's complaining about it. So many files have gone missing or corrupt. It's crazy. I would actually estimate about a quarter of the evidence I have is gone.
Wow. When you realize that much of your evidence is gone, and it's likely due to something that's beyond you. I mean, how do you square that?
Right.
How do you square that up? I mean, is there any, what sort of, you try to, I'm sure, think of, you know, safeguards to prevent things like that happening. But at the end of the day, how much ability do you have?
Right. I mean, I spent, when I got into this, I really found my passion for filming and photography, and combining that with, I spent nearly a decade in the IT field. And so I know I'm using high quality memory cards with a high transfer rate. I know I'm using solid external drives that I've formatted specifically to match the data cards so that I know everything's in line. I've got cameras that can back up other cameras, multiple audio sources. So I have redundancies planned in, and I'm using quality equipment that I know can be reliable. But at some point, everything is basically energy that we're dealing with. Everything's energy, even something physical. Mm-hmm. And so these cards or the cameras, things can malfunction just from a change in that. I mean, if you really think about it, take even like a supercomputer, for example, that is one of the most highly advanced computers that we have. The data rates are uncomparable, stuff like that. But if you are to perform maintenance on it or get into it, a single static shock so small you don't even feel it from you to that main board can kill the entire thing. It is that sensitive.
It's amazing. They almost have their own way of deciding what material you can keep and what you can't.
Right. And I learned the extent in the documentary. There was a long drone shot to the house. And I actually, I was there by myself for a week. And in season two, I really would like to aim for 3 to 4 weeks. But I was leaving the house and it's this long dirt driveway. I'm the only one there. And I was like, you know, before I leave, since my truck is out of the shot, I'm just going to do a drone shot real quick to the house and back, and then just put the drone in the truck and just go home. So I pull over off into the field. Before I leave, I'm at the corner a good distance from the house so that I can get a nice shot from it. And I was like, I'm going to be 5 minutes. I'll just leave the keys and running the truck running and I'll just do this. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm getting out of the truck, I had this very strong intuitive moment that I needed to unwind the driver's side window. Didn't have any reasons why logically, just whatever. I didn't ignore it. And I went for it and just rolled it down. As I'm pulling, I do this drone shot, and as I'm bringing the drone back, I land it, and I'm putting it in the case, and I hear clunk, clunk, and I go over to my truck, and I'm like, no way, and I pull on the passenger handle, and my truck is locked. It's almost like it didn't want me to leave.
Yeah.
But if I had not wound that window, I mean, it's in park, the engine's running. I don't have any extra keys or fobs. There's no reason it should have received a lock signal to do that. Mm-hmm. And I've never had it happen prior to that, nor have I had it happen since then. And that was like 2 or 3 years ago that happened. And so, if I hadn't wound that window down, I'm in the middle of nowhere with no cell service, and I would have had to walk into town to find somebody to help me, and the truck would have just had to sit there running.
Yeah. That wraps up part two of our conversation with Ryan Wethelmeyer about being in touch with the dead. A big thank you to him for joining us on this discussion today. Very interesting and exciting. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for the support of the Grave Talks.